Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter. And if you're listening to us on audio only, I'd appreciate you rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you listen to it. And of course, if you like what I do here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube and hit that bell for notifications. Are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for Kung Fu Genius fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill in your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this guy on the cover. My Kung Fu Genius column is in all the new issues, as if you need another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube, lots of gems, lots of mindfulness, lots of, yo, Yoda should not be fighting like a raccoon on speed. Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Practice all day like a genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
Oh, man, we're back.
We are back. Now, of course, for our audience, we're here every week, right?
Yeah,
No. We have an episode every week. So for them, there's no continuity issue. But What people might not realize is that we recorded a crap ton of episodes in October
and a little bit in November,
because I had a whirlwind November and a whirlwind December where I was basically not in New York at all. So we had to record all, like last week's episode, the one with Vincent Lin, that one I recorded way in the end of November. And so this is the first new episode. We were like, you know, the problem is we were so far ahead. We were like, we recorded all these episodes. We're good.
Yeah.
And then we just realized when the Vincent episode hit, oh crap, we don't have any episodes left. So this episode is coming out and we just recorded this in the previous week. So this is actually our first newish episode in a very long time, right?
What I found cool was that the premieres would be like premieres for us too. Because we totally forgot we did the episode.
We totally forgot what the episode was about. Yeah. Andrew would edit it. And then on Monday, I'd be like, okay, here I am at the premiere. What the hell is this episode about? Oh, it's the one where we talked about that, right?
So,
and it was like, oh yeah, I didn't even remember all the stuff we had talked about. So here we are. This is technically our first episode recorded here in the new year. This is episode 51, and we have one episode a week. So that means we're almost up to 1 year of KFG episodes, right? So we got one more episode
after
this.
Monumental.
That'll be 52, so that'll be our first year.
You know what else is monumental? We are almost at 5K subscribers.
5K subscribers. Maybe even by the time of this, we have passed it.
Yeah.
Or if we didn't, we look like a fat failure, right? We probably have crushed 5K subscribers by the time this episode's come out. We're like at 48, 14 or something like that, right? It would be really great to crush those 5K subscribers. We thank everyone for your tremendous support in the first year. I think what I'm going to do is after the 52nd episode, because I have playlists on the YouTube channel, we got the KFG podcast.
Sweet.
I'm going to have all of those in there for year one, and then I'll create a new playlist, which will be all the year two stuff, because after a while, I think it'll be too hard for everyone to like have to go through
skim all of that stuff.
So we'll just do it. So instead of seasons, we just do it kind of year by year. So yeah, we'll be starting year two. So obviously, if you guys have ideas about the kind of things you want me to talk about or interviews and things like that, go ahead and write those in the comments. More than happy to give you guys the stuff that you want to hear.
Okay.
Pretty funny today.
I was just about to mention.
Two random and disconnected entities, all right? Someone on Facebook and someone on YouTube was like, they saw that I was interviewing Vincent Lin, good friend of mine, Hong Kong movie action star.
He's one of the OGs,
like, and they're like, you know who you really need to interview for your podcast? Bobby Samuels. And I read that two random people. One person was like, yo, I have this very important message I'm going to send you. He wrote in the comments, like, I sent you a message. It's very important. Go check it out. And the message was like, I can put you in touch with Bobby Samuels if you want to have him on the podcast. Now, Bobby Samuels, he's like my brother. He's a good, we've traveled. We've been to LA. We've been to Mexico together. We hung out with Lomong. Yeah. We've done stuff. It's like, Bobby's my boy.
You know who would appreciate that?
Yeah.
Bobby Samuels.
Yeah, Bobby Samuels would appreciate that. Right? But the crazy thing is, we had Bobby Samuels on the podcast. It's episode 10. Uh-huh. And it's unfortunately like the least watched episode in the whole podcast. It's one of my favorite episodes. Well, I think it is also, I will assume that the Vincent Lin episode we did last week is probably also not going to be super well watched, only because I think people, we did the thing the other day. We looked at like, what are the top episodes on the Kung Fu Genius channel, right? And we looked at everything there and we're like, okay, what do people want?
Yep.
Without fail, okay, with the exception, I think, and it was, to be fair, was what were the top episodes in the last, because YouTube shows
top
you 10. What. Your top 10 episodes in the last 28 days, meaning who's watching. And maybe not overall, but like in the last 28 days, what are people watching, right? And so obviously the newer episodes are on there because a lot of more people watch the newer episodes than the older ones. But like with the exception of like the last two or three episodes, which are automatically going to be on there, every single episode had Bruce Lee in the title in or the Bruce title. Lee in the thumbnail. In,
yes.
Okay. So it's very clear. All right. The YouTube algorithm does not want me to talk to Hong Kong action movie stars.
Oh, man.
They do not want me to talk about...
Unless it's Bruce Lee.
MMA or something like that. Yeah. But as long as Bruce Lee... And the funny thing is, like, on some of the thumbnails, you know, in any of these AMA episodes, we answer maybe 8 to 10 questions, let's say, on average, right?
Right.
And inevitably, one or two of them go over Bruce Lee, right? But it might not even be the main topic of the whole episode. But if we have one Bruce Lee question in there, I put that in the description. I put that in the thumbnail because that's apparently all people ever want me to talk about, which is Bruce Lee. And I'm totally fine with
you
that.
You know, I might have a suggestion that might even like get us like viral.
Yes.
The Bruce Lee Ouija board.
Ouija board. Yeah. Did you say Ouija?
A Ouija board.
Ouija board, uh-huh.
With Bruce Lee chiming in.
Wow. You know, maybe we can get Dryson to do a seance. All right? And Dryson will be controlling the Ouija board.
How do we get him if we don't know who he is?
Well, you are clearly somehow in communication with him because you always read his questions. So why don't you comment?
I don't even think he likes me.
I think he does like you because no matter what he writes, you always say it. Meanwhile, we have hardcore
questions.
But we have hardcore podcast fans
that
write questions all the time and we don't always get to it just because we have so many. All right.
Yeah,
you know what's also great about Dryson? About half of the podcast listeners love Dryson.
Oh, yeah.
And the other half, dude, I get pure hate thrown my way because of Dryson. People
I
like,
agree
oh,
with those I hate guys.
Everyone who's in the live chat during the episode, they love it.
Yeah.
But like so many people are like, I don't like the Dryson questions or whatever. And the fact that he pisses people off so much means we're going to keep him forever. Somebody sent me a message the other day because I posted a photo of you and Dryson the other day. You guys happened to be together in the same room.
Yeah, that was weird because I
right?
wasn't sure if it was him or not.
I think it was him. I think it was him. I'm pretty sure.
Out. Because he had Dryson-esque qualities about him.
But here's the thing. I posted that photo on my Instagram, at the Kung Fu Genius.
Okay.
Someone wrote a message to that photo. Hypothetical. Can Dryson still ask hypothetical questions with 10 broken fingers? That is the level of hate some people have towards Dryson.
Dude is not.
Yeah,
he's definitely mafioso.
There's a high level
of
soft
going
over there. Yeah.
All the way with
question. There's actually a saying in Austrian slang, in which is obviously said in German, but it's done with very heavy Austrian slang. I will translate it into English. It's a kind of saying you say when you're like talking shit to someone, like, you know, I wanna put you in your place or I wanna intimidate you, right?
Oh shit.
And it's have you ever picked up teeth off the floor with broken fingers?
Actually I have.
So there you go.
Yeah,
so anyway,
hopefully Dryson,
we are back. Yeah. So let's, we're here for another AMA episode.
We are, man.
And
we
let's
are.
Get
this is exciting.
To it. Let's get to it.
All right. So, first,
and these questions are like from back in October because we haven't been. People keep writing questions, going like, yo, where do I put questions? I'm like, in the comments, but we're not recording anything until January. So, anyway, apologize for the
definitely.
The
my apologies if we haven't gotten to your question yet. And
it's Dre's fault.
We will get to them eventually in the new year, I hope.
Mostly.
Yeah. But let's set it off with Wing Chun Kung Fu Warsaw.
Yeah, from Poland.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Hello, Sifu. Great podcast. I have a question.
Okay, here we go.
Are there any exercises to train specifically the motto, don't chase hands, chase center line? Thank you, Sifu, for your answer. In advance, he thanked you.
In
for
advance.
The answer.
Wow.
Because he knew.
I don't know.
Get this question.
That's a lot of pressure when people thank you in advance for the answer because the answer could suck. Right? And then I already got the thank you for it. And
so
then,
much
you know,
pressure.
And then I feel bad because, I already got the thank you, right? It's like if you tip your waiter first before they serve you the food, right? So, okay. Obviously, in Wing Chun, it's very important that we don't chase hands, all right? Chasing hands is essentially like back in the day, if you were a skateboarder and you couldn't skate. You had a skateboard, you had the bestest skateboard, you had all the gear, you looked the role, but you couldn't skate to save your life. You, sir, were a poser,
that
all
was
right?
Me.
Yeah.
That was me.
That's right. You got called a poser, and being called a poser as a skateboarder
the best board and
was
everything.
Probably like the biggest insult you can get because it just meant that you were basically a fake, right?
Oh,
so in Wing Chun, if you are deemed a hand chaser, that's kind of the same thing, right? Because obviously, when we're talking about fighting, your opponent is under no obligation to stick to your hands. They're under no obligation to do anything, right? Especially if that person doesn't do Wing Chun. They're going to try to punch you. They're going to try to grab you. They're going to try to hold on to you. So they're under no obligation to adhere to how you do Pun Sao or how you do push hands or how your starting position or however. They're going to try to hit you and grab you, and your main thing is you need to protect yourself, right? So how do we do this in a way where we hopefully avoid them punching us in the face or getting hit? Well, a big important idea in Wing Chun is, well, don't chase the hands. If you're chasing the hands, there are a couple problems with that. One, you put yourself in the victim role. He starts, you got to follow. You're chasing him. You're always the one kind of in second place, which means you allow the other person to take the initiative. You allow the other person to have an advantage. So that's one issue with chasing hands. The other problem is that unlike most martial art demonstrations, when someone punches, they're not going to leave their arm posted out there for
like a poser
for 3 seconds for you to do your bong sao, lap sao, and back fist because they're holding their arm out there, right? I don't even care if you do it fast. If someone flicks a quick jab, by the time you throw your bong sao and grab, the hand is already gone. And worse yet, that hand is gone and the second one is already coming in. So if you're standing there trying to block and chase hands and do all this kind of stuff, your mileage may vary on whether that's actually a successful strategy or not, right? So what do we do in Wing Chun? We try to go to the body. We try to attack our opponent's core. Essentially, da msin, attack the noon line, right? Go to the core, go to the center axis, right? So that means that our main operating system is to go to the opponent's center, to their axis, and not to chase the hands, okay? Now, of course, there's some exceptions to that, right? You have to be, if someone is giving you a wild swing, all right, and you don't have enough punching power to knock someone down with your awesome straight line. Yeah, you may have to do a tan sao, fuk sao, or some kind of inside controlling technique to stop that thing coming at you, which may not be going to your partner's center. Right? Mm. Obviously, there are exceptions. Right? But in essence, we're always trying to attack our opponent's center. So in Wing Chun, we have a saying. Well, like I say, in Wing Chun, we have a lot of sayings. Yao sao, ti sao, which if you have hands, stick to hands. Mo sao zui ying. No hands, chase the body. All right? So what does that mean? You go forward. You're sending your hands to your opponent. And if there's something in the way, your opponent's arm, an obstruction, of course you stick to it. If you lose stick, the guy can punch you back. But if there are no hands in the way, you should go forward and hit your opponent. Now, of course, that's also a bit of an oversimplification because there are exceptions, wild swings, different types of attacks. It's not always so simple and so black and white. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to learn how to attack the center, avoid chasing the hands, and only stick to the hands in as much as they are impeding our ability to go forward or they're coming towards us. So what kind of exercises do we do to avoid this? Well, I would say every single exercise you do in Qisao is done with this concept in mind. If you are doing exercises in Qisao where you are chasing hands, either you are wrong or the exercise is wrong. So this, the person who asked the question, he's from WT. Everything we do in WT is based on the idea of going towards the body, not chasing the hands. And sometimes, you know, maybe we have some exercises and drills where you learn how to stick and borrow force and do all this kind of stuff. But that is never done at the expense of losing that idea of not chasing the hands, right? So I would say there are no special exercises. I mean, there are things we can emphasize as a trainer. I cannot, in a mostly audio podcast, really explain that to any great degree. You would have to come and actually learn from me, which you can do by going to citywt.com. And I do lessons online. This stuff is way better taught one-on-one, but I can also do it interactively that way. I cannot really do it on the podcast. But I would say everything you do should be done with that aim. So there you go.
Sweet. Yes. Good question. Good answer as well.
I hope I earned the thank you in advance.
Only one way to find out from my boy, Waza Wawa.
Raza Wawa.
All right, next up, we got Shadowmancer 101.
Shadowmancer in the house from Hong Kong.
Yeah, is he?
He lives in Hong Kong, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay. I just heard Hong Kong Cafe shut down.
That's what I've been told. I saw it in a recent Prime TV show. I was like, oh, remember that? And even in Hong Kong, where they did a pretty good job, I think, of containing the virus, it was still some casualties of the virus of unknown origins.
Oh, man. All right. Next up, Shadowmancer 101. Hi, KFG. Love the episode Bruce Lee's Chi Sao versus HK Style.
Ah, yes.
Dre, TFG, Dryzen, British Kung Fu Guy, the BKFG. BKFG, that's you. All right. The whole team is awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you know any details about Yip Man's teaching style or how he structured his classes. I've heard different snippets and stories over the years. Was he strict, structured, or relaxed?
Mm-hmm.
I've trained in both structured and relaxed environments and appreciate both approaches.
Right. That's a great question. Unfortunately, I was born in 1977. Yip Man died in 1972. So anything I would say about how Yip Man structured his classes is something told to me by someone who was either there or told to them by someone who was there, all right? So very, very important. I always have to throw up those warnings right away because when you know what it is? When you have a platform like a podcast or you're an instructor or you have a lot of students, you have a responsibility. And you have a responsibility to tell people that I might not be the most qualified person to answer this question, all right? I certainly ask anyone I know who learned from Sifu Yip Man, all right? I always ask them, what were the classes like? Also, people who learned from Bruce Lee, I ask them the same thing because normally I find like when people, let's say someone meets a student of Bruce Lee, what do they ask? Well, was Bruce Lee really that fast? Was Bruce Lee really that good? And what are they going to say? Yeah, he was really that good.
Yeah.
And then what insight did you gain from that answer?
Who would not say that?
Yeah,
right?
But you need to ask better questions. You want to learn something. You don't ask these like, was Bruce Lee really that good? To someone who learned from Bruce Lee. No, he sucked. That's why I learned from him. Right? Like, I mean, come on.
To his classes every day.
You got to ask questions that the answers are going to give you insight or tell you something you didn't know before. So, for example, when Steve Golden was here a number of years ago, he taught a seminar here.
Hmm.
I asked him because Steve Golden learned both in the LA Chinatown School and then later he also learned privately from Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what was a group class with Bruce Lee like? You know what I mean? Because that is interesting to me because that you never think about. Like people always think about what kind of techniques he did or whatever or who learned what from whom. But I want to know like, what was the class like? How did you start the class? Did you bow in? Did you have warm-ups? Did you do this? Was there a structure? Whatever. Those are the kind of things that I like to ask.
Straight Hong Kong style.
Exactly, right? And it turns out that Bruce was, as to be expected, a kind of very seat of the pants, very non-structured instructor. Like, just today you're going to do this, and that day you're going to do that. And it's very like as the wind blows, so to speak, right? Okay. Which to a certain degree is very Chinese, right? Despite the fact that Bruce Lee was very modern and progressive, he also still was a product of the environment in which he learned martial arts. So we cannot expect that Bruce would have come from a relatively... it's formal in terms of Chinese culture, but it's informal in terms of there being like a syllabus and a teaching structure. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly a few years later, he would be in the States and be teaching like in a very modern didactic kind of way with like a structured class, which, you know, tapers the intensity up and brings them down and has these kind of plot points. And like, we cannot expect that that's going to be the case. Right. So, of course, I have to always tell people, well, I mean, I can tell you some stuff that I heard. All right. But again, because the KFG said Yip Man's classes were like, who the hell gives a shit what the KFG says about Yip Man's classes? I wasn't even a piece of protein when he died in 1972. All right. So literally anything I'm telling you is like second, third hand. Me right.
Neither.
Exactly. Right. So according to Sifu Chan Chiman, Yip Man was a very attentive instructor. But you also have to look at how Sifu Chan Chiman learned. Sifu Chan Chiman, because of his job when he was young, he didn't work in the early part of the day. He worked later in the evening. So when he came to learn from Yip Man, he came like in the morning. And during that time, most of the other students of Yip Man were at work. So I think what people have to realize is that it's not like a modern thing. Like, we have a class here in, you know, we have a school here in New York City and we have a class schedule. You can come and do an intro lesson, and beginner classes are on these days a week. Advanced mm-hmm. classes are on these days a week. You could do private training. Like, there's a syllabus and we have a ranking system to keep some kind of standard. We have to, like, if you really want to think about what training was like back then, you cannot think of the modern martial arts model and then try to like see how it was different. You have to get all of that stuff out of your head completely. All right. And really think of a much more kind of smaller, intimate and informal way of almost private instruction, even within a group class setting. And obviously, most of the students would come in during the evening. Normally, the most Chinese Kung Fu schools, not just Wing Chun, like, you don't really have class times. You have what I call class windows. Oh. The Sifu is going to be at the school from 7 to 10. All right. And even to this day, many Chinese Kung Fu schools, including some of my Sibaks in Hong Kong, they're like that. You don't really have a set class. You have it in, you, I'm not going to say, there are obviously schools in Hong Kong that have set class schedules and so on and so forth. But many of the more traditional ones, they don't. Sifu is at the school from 6 to 10, Monday through Thursday, let's just say. And so you just show up anywhere in that window, 6 to 10, and practice. And wow. If the Sifu is in a good mood or whatever, he'll show you some stuff. And if not, you're basically just practicing while your Sifu sits there, watches you, and maybe gossips a little bit or gives you some basic corrections. But this is a very different mindset from coming to a structured group class. And to a certain degree, why the classes that do have structured syllabuses in Hong Kong are doing so well, because it's so antithetical to the way Kung Fu was taught in Hong Kong. Do you know what schools are doing? Really, Thai boxing is doing really good. Not just because it's Thai boxing, but if you go to a Thai boxing gym in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. there's a schedule. There's a bunch of different instructors, trainers, the class itself as a structure. You got warm-ups, you got bag work, you got mitt work, sparring, and then some workout at the end. And there's a structure to it, almost like a story arc. And people like that, even in Hong Kong. The fact that Chinese Kung Fu was taught in a very informal and non-structured way doesn't mean it's correct. There are a lot of people that say, well, this is part of Chinese culture. Yeah, I get it. I dealt with that stuff for a very long time. I get it. I understand it. There are parts of it that are very advantageous, but there's also parts of it that are unfortunately very outdated. And I think when it comes to Sifu Yip Man, it was varied. Mm-hmm. Because Sifu Chan Chiman, because of his work, he worked in the evening. He could come during, let's say, the training window earlier in the day, when Yip Man would go for dim sum in the morning. So he would show up, he would practice. There were no other students there because he was there in the morning. So he would do the Siunum Tao form and Yip Man would do it across from him. So Yip Man would be his mirror and they would kind of almost like dueling Siunum Taos, right? Oh, and then okay. And then he would teach him by hand. And then maybe they would walk over to the Sam Tai Chi temple and train over there. And then they would go have dim sum. Why is dim sum important? Because many of the traditional Chinese Sifu, it's not like nowadays, like, yeah, I want to teach you theory. I go on the whiteboard, right? And I explain to you center line and give you some Chinese terminology and explain to you angles. Like, it was not like that in the 50s, right? This is a very modern approach to things, right?
They didn't invent the whiteboard
back then. They didn't have the whiteboard. They still had blackboards and chalk back then. Who wants one of those, right? And so if you wanted to get details, theory, those details and theory were normally taught over dim sum. For two reasons. One, the class is basically an open training format. It's not a discussion session. You just go there and you practice and you get some correction. If you want the details in the theory, you do that while you're while you're sipping tea and talking, and then the sifu can explain some stuff to you. But the other reason why that was done there is also because the students who came to dim sum with the sifu were the students who were closer to the sifu. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy of the closer students who would have been invited to come for dim sum. Also, obviously, coincidentally, were the ones who learned the theory over dim sum, right?
I wonder who went around inviting everyone to give him a piece of paper.
No. You know, the sifu is the one who's got to tell you whether you come or not, right? So anyway, I'm sure some people thought it was somewhat structured and some people thought it wasn't structured. And like I said in a recent episode, you know, if the Yip Man school lived in the age of the internet, it would have 2-star reviews. Mm. Because most of the people who would go there probably didn't get paid attention to. And as a matter of fact, my wife, who did her law degree in Hong Kong, after you do law school in Hong Kong, you have to do basically an apprenticeship with a lawyer. And that apprenticeship you do with a lawyer, usually you call that lawyer a sifu.
Okay.
So my wife has a sifu, but her sifu is in law.
Okay.
And so she was basically her mentor when she got out of law school or when she was finishing law school or whatever it was. And so this was obviously in years before she had met me. So she, Kung Fu wasn't really on her radar, but she did find out that her sifu in law had learned from Yip Man when he was young. All right. And so she asked him, or maybe had come up in conversation, you know, oh, you learned from Yip Man what it was like. And he was like, he just made us do the Siunim Tao for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I got bored and left. And of course, in hindsight, now Yip Man is super famous, and you go like, oh man, you were actually learning from Yip Man. Yip Man was your sifu, and you were like, oh, you didn't care, right? But if you think about it, like, you just show up, you're in the stance, you're doing the Siunim Tao form with minimal to little correction, depending on what phase you were learning from him from. And if you don't have absolute desire to learn this and go through it, after a few weeks, you peace out, right? And so, exactly. Like you, they, if you don't have a strong enough why to do martial arts in that very traditional Chinese setting, you won't stick around. And that's why traditionally most Chinese martial arts schools, the only people who thrived in those schools were the most talented, the most intelligent, the hardest working, and the most intuitive. And of course, you hear that and you go, yeah, of course, if you do martial arts, you got to work hard and you got to, yeah, I totally get that. And it's still the same way nowadays. Your most talented students are usually your best students are usually the hardworking ones who got that combination of talent and work and grit. You have to have all those things. It's still the same even with a modern teaching method. But what about the people who are not the most talented or
like
the most serious? Yeah, exactly, like you. Who are coming to your martial arts school because they want to improve some aspect of their lives. Do they have to go through this boring shit test of Siunim Tao for 6 months and nothing else for them to maybe gain a little bit of self-confidence? Is that really the best way to help someone improve their life? Is the traditional method really the best way to do that? Or is it a way for sifus to weed out the people who are not serious so that the only people around are their most talented, most dedicated disciples, not because those are the only people who deserve to learn Wing Chun, but because those are the students that don't make them look bad. When you have a student in your school who's not particularly talented or hardworking, but they enjoy it, you know, you walk into someone's school and you see some guy in the corner, steps don't look that good, punches don't look that good, and of course, martial arts, that guy sucks over there. Yeah, but that guy is maybe here for a totally different reason. And that person loves it. All right. And if I taught in a super traditional way, they would have left in 4 weeks and they'd be rotten miserable in their lives because they don't have martial arts to improve their lives. Mm-hmm. So having to have everyone be super hardcore and super great, you know, that's like this thing like, oh, I only teach people who are super serious or only teach, you know, my school is only like really, really good. Yeah, okay, that's great. I get it. I understand. But you know what that is? That's the instructor's ego. That's you not realizing that the martial arts you teach can help more people than just the tough guys who walk into your gym. So that's a bit of a tangent from the original question, mainly because I couldn't answer it. So let's go to the next one.
All right, quick, on your come up,
yeah.
Have you ever had that experience as far as like non-structured or structured classes?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I know you had the structured, super structured.
Right.
The non-structured, who was that for you?
Or pretty much every Chinese instructor I learned from, with the exception of Sifu Carson Lau was relatively structured. Mm-hmm. Sifu Elman Leung was relatively unstructured. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I could still learn a lot in those is because in those unstructured classes is because a lot of my unstructured training from Chinese Sifus came once I was already an instructor.
Mm-hmm.
So I already had the foundation. I was already teaching, for lack of, I mean, people may disagree with me. I already knew what I was doing to a certain degree, right? I didn't need that structure to be able to get something.
I'm thinking, like, in your early days, you told me about, you told us about the guy who would open a door, look out. Come on.
Oh, you're talking about my Siheng Daniel Eng.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
The guy, he was in the WT organization, but he left, and he was always afraid that Emin would find out that he was teaching secretly or whatever. No. He just beat the shit out of me all the time, right? So I would just go over there, and then for an hour and a half,
okay,
we would just spar, and he would just beat the shit out of me with Chi Sao or with Lat Sao or whatever. Mm. And that was, but that was great because in the class, I was getting the structured program, and then with Daniel, I would just train. So he wasn't my sole source of Wing Chun at that time, right? So I've always been very lucky. I always consider myself like the Forrest Gump of Wing Chun, that I always just happen to be around at the right place in the right time, and I meet the right people, and I'm always there when something crazy happens, whether it was when Emin left the association, there was all that stuff that happened in Europe. I was literally there with all the people involved. When, you know, all this like politics with Sergio and all these politics with these other people. I was like kind of always there, either with Sifu Langteng or someone else, and like able to kind of hear things from the horse's mouth as they were happening. And that was always it's always been kind of my dumb luck.
Wow. Yeah. You're like the guy in the photo from like 100 years ago.
You always see the same guy in all the photos. That's kind of me. Okay. That's kind of me. Like a vampire that never dies.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
All
right.
Possibly your, Stan Lee in all the MCU movies.
Hey. Yes, kind of like that, yeah.
All right, Stan Lee, Alex Lee.
Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners. If you're looking for an easy way to support this podcast, please consider joining the Kung Fu Genius Patreon. You can support for as little as $5 a month and get access to episodes a few days early. Higher levels of support get additional goodies, exclusive content, and even your name in the description. The baller level of support will give you the opportunity to be a Dre for a day and give me a rest from this guy over here. A link for the Kung Fu Genius Patreon page is in the description below. You can also support us by subscribing to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, liking this video, and sharing it on your social media platforms. When you subscribe on YouTube, don't forget to hit that bell for notifications so you will know as soon as a new episode or a premiere is available for you to watch. For those of us who listen to us on audio, it's a huge help if you don't just rate the podcast, but also write a review wherever you listen to the Kung Fu Genius, such as Apple or Google Podcasts. I really appreciate it. And now back to me.
All right. Next up. Next up, we got Dingo Smith.
Dingo Smith.
Yes.
Australian?
Man.
He's Australian, right?
Australian.
All right, let's go.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's a couple of potential general topics.
Okay. General topics. All right.
One.
Did you even screen these questions?
Tai Chi. Qi Gong and the other internal martial arts.
Yes.
Two. Meditation.
Oh, wait, that was the whole thing.
Meditation and its links to WC.
Meditation links in the
meditation and its links to WC. I guess these are the topics that he wants
those
you to discuss.
Those are very broad, all
and
right?
Not questions. This is just boom.
Just
talk about it.
There you go. Here's
give him something to talk about.
Here's something. Say some shit. All right.
that is a ask me anything.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, that's a say something.
Yeah.
That's not an ask me anything. That's a say something. KFG. Tai Chi, which is Tai Chi.
Well, it's spelled T-A-I-G-I.
J-I. Because that's the correct Mandarin spelling using pinyin. The C-H-I, Tai Chi, is like kind of an Americanized spelling of it. It's actually pronounced Tai Chi.
It's like the British
Chi.
Did.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. But that's also Mandarin. In Cantonese, is Tai Gek. Tai Chi is Tai Gek. It's not Tai Chi, right? Wow. Yeah, See, that's what I know about it. No, I really don't know anything about it. Look, I have in New York, I've had the luck, you know, we've at our school, we've had like push hands people come here.
Some Tai Chi people.
Yeah, we've had some Tai Chi people. Yeah. And teach seminars. So, I, you know, I've had the chance to see some kind of Tai Chi people of note.
Levitation and see, skills. Yes.
Yeah, well, that, it just not that, that story too, right? And, you know, see what these guys do for push hands and exchange a little bit or whatever. And I find it interesting. I mean, for me, I'm very specialized in Wing Chun and I have a broad knowledge of Kung Fu, but I'm very specialized in Wing Chun and I kind of like martial arts in general. I've seen some of the best Tai Chi guys, like teach seminars, forms and push hands. And I've seen these guys toss their students around or whatever. And I don't have the bug for it. Like I'm not into it. Like, to be honest, like, and I have friends who are really good at Tai Chi. See, for Brian Cuddle has an online Tai Chi class. Like, I actually would like to learn Tai Chi for movement, you know, especially as I get older, just to have something to,
you're like 90.
Like a hobby for my brain to kind of learn some new movements, but not because I'm going to use it to do push hands or ward someone off. I have a different idea about what I value in fighting and in self-defense. And, those arts, for me and for other people, they do. But for me, those arts don't tick off the boxes, okay? I'm interested. I have tons of books on Tai Chi. I've read about it. I'm saying this. I know more than I'm leading on, but it's not something I'm super interested in, all right? It's not my specialty, all right? So that's kind of really all I got to say about that. Meditation, I mean, obviously... Yeah, meditation
Qigong.
Yeah, Qigong, working with your breath. Qigong is a very broad topic. When you say Qigong, it can be anything from just basic morning exercises to limber up your body and do some breathing to hard style Qigong where you're smashing stuff with your forearms and stuff like that. So Qigong or Hei Gong in Cantonese is a very broad topic. You have obviously medical Qigong and you have Qigong for health and you have Qigong for martial practice or whatever. So that's an extremely broad topic. And I like to practice. I do some basic Qigong in the morning. But when I say Qigong, I'm not talking about mystical forces and, you know, creating whammy electric hands with, like, I'm not that guy. I don't believe in any of that stuff.
That little trouble.
If that stuff was real, we would see it. And I know every time I say this on the podcast, I get super triggered comments. Like, and people send me videos like, look at this guy's internal power, right? And it's always a video of someone holding a phone book or someone standing there and someone stands in front of him, boom, and whacks this guy with a lot of power. And I go, yeah, that's awesome. You're hitting someone who's standing there with a lot of power, and you can see that the person has power. But remember, power is specific, all right? If you train one type of punch and you do that again and again and again and you train that, you'll be really, really good at that. But the question is, can you use that punch in the melee of fighting where now you are not, the guy's not standing there with a phone book in his chest, you're breathing, you're taking your time, and then you have the time to rotate and spiral your arm into it. If I just push you and take a swing at you, can you give me the same hit in that situation? And I would posit most of those guys can't. Every time I talk about a lot of that stuff being BS, like the Dimmock and stuff like this, people always send me these clips. And the clips is always some guy standing there getting hit by a guy. And it's never with resistance. And look, if you want to demonstrate your power, of course, the guy stands there, you hit him, you show how powerful you are. But don't tell me that's the same thing as a fighting application, okay? Because we all have the potential to knock someone out when they're standing there letting us hit them, right? And then sometimes they send me these demos where the guy will hit the guy and the guy will go flying. I remember this one guy sent me, he's like, no, man, you're totally wrong about Dimmock. Dimmock is totally real, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and which is why you see so many mixed martial artists flocking to China to learn this stuff, right? That might be sarcasm. Because the thing is, mixed martial artists, if the shit works, they will learn it.
Yeah.
Okay? You don't see them flocking over to learn that stuff, man. Right? And I know there's one or two guys in mixed martial arts who might be into it. Yeah, it's because they don't know. Because no one's going to teach them the real thing because they're mixed martial artists and they're just external and they don't get it and they don't have all the internal attributes to do it.
I thought Dimmock was against the rules in that UFC.
Yeah, no. I might be confusing it with Bloodsport. With the Kumite rules, right? So anyways, one guy showed me, like, look how powerful this guy's punch is, right? And this guy comes up and he hits this guy and the other guy goes flying. And the guy that he hit weighed like a buck 05 and he was wearing sagging jeans. Okay. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Right.
Yes.
So anyway, so
that's why I started wearing a belt, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't like do shit with my
jeans. Yeah. I tell you what, if you have saggy pants, it's a lot easier to knock you down. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, so when it comes to meditation, obviously meditation is something that a lot of people find very powerful for relaxation, for centering themselves and for mindfulness. Right. One thing that bothers me a little bit about Chinese martial arts is they often get housed with a lot of hooey nonsense, all right? Like, you're not really doing traditional martial arts if you, and then people always have their bullet points. If you are not practicing some form of this qigong, some form of this thing, some form of this thing, right? And truthfully, all different martial arts in Chinese kung fu, some have more of this, some have less of this, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing that always bothers me is when people have these sweeping statements, all Chinese martial arts contain this, 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 and this. All Chinese martial arts have this type of qigong, da, 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 da. And if you don't have it, it's not a real style of Chinese kung fu, right? Mm-hmm. And Wing Chun certainly has some aspects of qigong, especially when you look at the Siunam Tao form. It's actually structured very much like many internal beginner forms where you're standing in the same place. And mindfulness and focusing on your intention is a huge part of practice, but that's not exclusive to Wing Chun. I would posit you cannot really get good at any sport or any martial art, whether it's modern, traditional, competitive, whatever, if you do not apply aspects of mindfulness to what you're doing.
Okay.
But the problem is when you start saying mindfulness and concentration and you go beyond what these things are actually important for, all right, which is to a certain degree performance enhancement, doing things in a more natural way and thinking about what you're doing and not just kind of mindlessly doing things until you can do them in a natural way without thinking. But if you go way overboard with this, where like everything is like super mindful, you start to turn to that dude in LA where he comes in and he's like, you know, I am a Sifu. Oh, and yeah. Everything, when I put this pen down, I am very mindful about that.
He's in LA?
Guys like that. I met them and they're all in LA, all right? They're not in New York, right? And then you start to go into this overboard thing where it's like, the more mindful you are, the more you can stop anything.
Ooh.
And I go, jab, cross, hook, takedown. I'll put your mindfulness on the floor if you're not practicing against those things, right?
Oh,
so those things are great. Siunam Tao obviously has a huge aspect that it has parallels to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I mainly don't meditate that much because of my Siunam Tao practice. Acts for me as a standing, moving meditation. Mm. But other people might still add meditation to their practice, and that's up to them. You have to find the thing that works for you.
I think that mindfulness thing has been thrown in just to get the teenagers. Because
teenagers
are, when we're teenagers, we're just so gullible.
Well, mindfulness is a real thing. And they've done a lot of research in terms of how these things can improve your performance, whether it's in your work or athletic performance or whatever. Mm-hmm. The problem is that when you make that your main buzzword, and you see so many Wing Chun people, like when I see demonstrations sometimes, it's like, okay, I'm going to stand here in my stance.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Put your arm on my shoulder. And you put the arm on my shoulder. Why did you do it? Because I told you to do it. All right.
Yeah.
And then I tell you to push me and you push me and you can't move me. And I tell you to push harder. You can't move me. And then I do this. I focus my mindfulness and I go, and I use the spinal rotation and I push you back, all right? And then the other person goes, whoa, that's crazy.
A teenager.
Yeah, and then I go, okay, put your hand on my hand, push. And then I'm going to show you how I'm going to sink, push. And then I move my arm and you go flying back. And I say, see, because I'm focusing on whatever the aspect is, spinal alignment, power from the floor, this meridian, that meridian, or whatever. And people go, wow, you know, if I do a Wing Chun where I'm not totally thinking about these things, well, I could get pushed over. I can't push this person back. And I go, look, body mechanics are obviously one of the most important things in martial arts, all right? With bad body mechanics, you're not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah.
But the problem is martial arts and the conversations in martial arts always lie in the extremes. You're either like, I'm just like the modern mixed martial arts guy. It's all sparring and punching heavy bags. And, you know, if you're not bloody with a messed up face at the end of a training session, it's not real, right? And then on the other end of the spectrum, it's like, okay, I'm going to get into the Sunam Tao stance and I want you to push my elbow and see how you cannot push me. And then you move and then they go flying back like, whoa. And you have that on the other end of the equation where it's like, it's not about hitting the heavy bag and sparring. It's about being mindful and joint and alignment and thinking, projecting your power and energy and all this kind of stuff. And I sit here looking at both of those extremes and I go, do we really have to, are we really only allowed to discuss Chinese martial arts at the opposite ends of the spectrum, the most extreme versions of the argument? Can we not have a modern approach to training, which includes heavy bag training, sparring, mixing things up a little bit so that we really kind of can do this stuff in a way that is transferable to the way people fight nowadays, and also have some more intrinsic aspects which we can use to improve how we do the martial art in a more maybe internal way or whatever, without thinking that that's the thing that's going to stop the dude in the subway from putting his fist through your teeth. Okay? Like, right. Like, that's the problem. And this is why I feel that so many Wing Chun people lose the thread, because they're either like, oh, it's all, it's a guy, you, if you want to be able to be good at Wing Chun, you got to be doing mixed martial arts Wing Chun. And then for me, I find that the opposite end of the spectrum is people who are like afraid of that. So then they go like, no, the old real Wing Chun is all this. And I go, you know, we talk about Taoism, yin yang, balance, you know, you cannot have an effective segment of a totality, but then you look at how people talk and they're only talking from the extremes of either argument. And that is tiresome. Mm.
I would argue that it wouldn't be the teenagers who are going for mindfulness either. Teenagers just want
to teenagers just don't give a crap
fight.
About mindfulness.
But if you want to look for some early 30s people that want to be like, yo.
Early 30s, yo.
My hipsters.
I'll teach
like
you.
That.
I'll teach you mindfulness in boxing.
And for the record, all that mindfulness is a bunch of nonsense. It's really super culty.
It can be a little culty.
Maybe I should say.
But mindfulness is a phenomenon when it's applied correctly in a scientific way is actually a real thing. But usually when it's added as an appendage to something, it's kind of a culty thing where we're just going to talk about the alignment of our pinky finger and wrist, and we're not going to talk about like what's actually going to happen in a fight.
Yes,
So anyway, let's go to the next one.
All I know is watching Big Trouble in Little China as a little kid, I guess I wanted to do that shit on the mindfulness tip. And
all right, I don't know what mindfulness has to do with Big Trouble in Little China.
That was cool stuff.
Oh, I get it. Dre thinks mindfulness is shooting lasers out of rings. Here I am explaining all this stuff. Meanwhile, what's going on in his head is lasers.
What I want.
Yeah, yeah. You know. All right.
Let me say, next up. We got Garrett T.
All right, Garrett T.
All right, not Honest T.
Or
Mr. T. All right, we got Garrett T. He's coming in with some love the content.
Awesome.
Stoked to be on your Patreon as well.
Wow, thank you for supporting us on Patreon. That's right. That's right. He's one of our Patreon supporters.
All
right,
answered a lot of questions I have had recently for sure. Cool. I know you have mentioned it before, but what was the story of you earning your Cantonese name, and what was it? I am impatiently waiting on being given mine, but it's hard with leaving my previous lineage / Sifu. Uh-huh. Thanks for reading.
All right, cool.
Yo, that's for me, actually. Thanks for you got it, man. You got it, guaranteed.
My Chinese name is Wai Yitao. Wai Yitao is the name of a Buddhist saint, I suppose. And my name was given to me by Sifu Liang Tang. In fact, for those of you out there who have my Sunam Tao book, available at the online shop, citywt.com/shop. I actually have the photo in there. Sifu Liang Tang, like to some of his students or the people that learn from him, he'll, you know, give them a Chinese name, which is just kind of for fun, you know. In some martial arts schools, like if you're a Westerner, non-Chinese, your Chinese instructor or whatever giving you a Chinese name is like, in some schools it's kind of done for fun, like, oh, let me give you a Chinese name. And in other schools it can be maybe a little bit more ceremonial or have a little bit more heft. Like, so I know, for example, in the Moyet family, sometimes instructors in the Moyet family, they're given the Moy name. And then so they have the Moy name. So it's like they're part of the Moy family. And then the second part of their name might have some significance based on who their teacher was or maybe what number they are or something like that, right? So when it comes to getting a Chinese name as a non-Chinese person, like in some lineages, it's kind of a big deal. It's got like a lot of meaning. And in others, like in the lineage I come from, it was just kind of for fun, almost as a gag, right? Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, though, is that I got my Chinese name when I first came back to the States after training in Germany, and I had my first big instructor seminar, or actually second big instructor seminar, with Sifu Leung-Ting. After the seminar, we went to a sushi restaurant, and it was kind of one of the first times I think I had really gone out to eat with him, like, privately. Mm-hmm. And I sat next to him, and we were eating sushi, and he was drinking sake, and he was telling me all sorts of crazy stories. And it was kind of like me getting to know him. This is 2002, 2003, I think, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it was a big deal. I'm starting my Wing Chun school. I have the chance to hang out with Sifu Leung-Ting. And then he's like, "Oh, we'll give you a Chinese name." And I remember another Wing Chun instructor there, he kind of looked at me. He's like, "Oh, he must like you if he's giving you a Chinese name."
Oh.
And then so, but my Chinese name doesn't have like any crazy significance. A lot of times when they try to give Westerners a Chinese name, sometimes they'll just take your Western name and they'll just find a Chinese equivalent of it. So something that sounds somewhat like your Western name, but in Chinese, you know? So for example, like maybe in Mandarin, if someone's name is like Mike, they might find like Mai Ge or something like that, something that approximates it, right? But it's not like really a name that a Chinese person would have. And other times your Sifu might actually give you something that sounds like a more proper Chinese name. So in my case, Waitao is comes from Richter.
Yeah.
All right. So that's what it is, because it's kind of like, do you want it off your first name or off your last name? So he was like, Richter, because of course there's no R in Cantonese. So he came at Waitao, Richter, right? Uh-huh. And Waitao happens to be like one of the many Buddhist saints. And he was apparently one of the protectors of Guanyin and protectors of knowledge. And so he had this kind of sword and this rod. And the crazy thing is that Sifu Leung-Ting had a napkin there and he had some pens. And he actually drew Waitao on the napkin.
Yeah.
And so that photo of that napkin I have in my Siunam Tao book, that he drew off the top of his head. This like one specific Buddhist saint. He just like drew it with multicolored pens. And then he wrote the name in Chinese and then he signed it Leung-Ting with the date. And so that then became my Chinese name, you know, which obviously has no real legal bearing, kind of. It's just like my Chinese name. And, you know, when I do interviews in Hong Kong, they call me by my Chinese name. And so when I was in the Apple Daily, funnily enough, many years later, when I had my famous war with Sifu Leung-Ting in Apple Daily, they call me Waitao in the article, right? So there he is like now at going to war with this Chinese guy whom he had named, right? So which is the genesis of the whole Kung Fu Genius name, right? Because there's some people, like sometimes I say some stuff in the podcast that piss people off. And they're like, you don't sound much like a genius. They're like, I don't know about a guy who calls himself Kung Fu Genius. Yeah. First of all, the nickname Kung Fu Genius is only used with the strictest of irony, okay? Yeah. As I've said multiple times on this show, among my closest friends who are really experts in Chinese martial arts, of which I would say I have a lot of friends who are really high-level experts in Chinese martial arts, I'm not in the top 15 or 20 mm-hmm. of just the people I know. I'm not even talking about the people I have not met yet in Hong Kong or China. Mm. I'm not even, myself included, with all my circle of friends, in the top 15 or 20 of people I know personally in terms of pure martial arts knowledge, okay? So for anyone who thinks that I use the term Kung Fu Genius with seriousness, or that I make my wife call me genius at home, all right, really misses the mark. You know what else? Why I always feel like people who get kind of salty, anyone who calls himself Kung Fu Genius, is like, have you seen the opening of this podcast? He's unstoppable, unbelievable, right. Unbelievable. He's Alex Richter. Does anybody watch that and go and then have that photo of me with like those thick glasses on looking like a total putz? Does anyone watch that opening and go like, dude, this guy's so arrogant. He really thinks he's a Kung Fu genius, all right? If you can watch that opening bit of this podcast and still think that I call myself Kung Fu Genius seriously, you have a cognition issue, all right? You need to watch it again slowly, perhaps in slow motion, maybe even in reverse, all right? Multiple times until you figure it out, okay? So anyway, yeah, but the Kung Fu Genius thing actually comes from, my former teacher, Siva Leung Ting, and I had a bit of a battle in the now defunct Apple Daily newspaper in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. where we had a bit of a back and forth, and that's actually where the Kung Fu Genius thing came about. All right? So anyway, what the hell was the question? I totally forgot.
The Cantonese name.
Oh, the Cantonese name, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so there's my Chinese name, right? And Sifu Leung Ting is having a battle with someone in Chinese with the name that he gave me, right? Yeah. So you must curse that because now I'm known for that
you
name,
must
right?
Have earned it in that 1 week.
Yes, but yeah. But here's the gag. That name is basically a name that he gave me over sushi for fun, right?
Yeah.
And so I've used it in Chinese articles, and you know, when Chinese people ask me what my Chinese name is, I tell them that, whatever. But the crazy thing is my first daughter was born in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. right? And when she was born, we had to go and fill out the birth certificate information, right? Wow. My wife is Chinese. Obviously, she has a Chinese name, but I'm her husband. So normally it would be like my daughter would have my Chinese name. Well, I am not Chinese. But we gave our daughter a Chinese name. But of course, the surname is... My surname is Richter. It's not Chinese. But when we went to fill out the birth certificate in Hong Kong at the town hall, we put Wai, my surname. Because remember, in Chinese, the surname comes first. So it's Wai is the family name. And then Tall would be the given name, right? So Wai is my family name, right? So we put Wai and then her Chinese name in there as her Chinese name. And then when it puts father's name, you put the father's name, we put Alexander Richter, Chinese name, Wai Tall. And they stamped it. So... My Chinese name, Wai Tao, has some legal standing in Hong Kong because it is actually on my daughter's Chinese birth certificate as my name. And then her name officially in Hong Kong is Wai. All right. Her surname. Isn't that crazy? So anyway, thank you, Si Gong.
Thank you.
All right. There we go.
Yes. Yes. The joke's on you. All right, next up, we got Michael F. Douglas.
Michael, I like how you did that slow, like it was leading up to something. Yeah. Like you were going to go Michael F. Applebottoms, right? But it was like a totally normal name.
But Michael right. Douglas is a dope
Michael
name.
Douglas is a dope you know, name. He's a dope actor.
F, throw an F in there mm-hmm. so you know.
So you know it's not the actor
exactly,
Michael Douglas, right?
Like Michael B. Jordan.
Right. You know what that B stands for? Basketball.
I hope it doesn't, but it might be true.
You know what the Shout E out. Stands for in Chuck E. Cheese? Entertainment.
Chuck Entertainment.
His actual real name
Cheese.
Is Charles Entertainment Cheese.
Wow. Things you didn't know.
And his backstory is really dark, but we'll get into that.
All right. That's another podcast. Time.
Another episode. Yes. All right. So Michael F. Douglas is asking, how often per week do you do the drill that you were explaining for developing explosive power? How often per week do you do that drill?
Okay, so I don't exactly remember that drill. What I remember, we
so
talked about
ago,
some explosive
yeah.
training or whatever. My training varies a bit week to week, all right? So I have kind of a steady thing that I do. Usually my strength training is about 3-4 times a week, depending. Cardio, I do about 5 days a week, but not like crazy, super intensive. You can't do crazy intensive cardio 5 days a week, kind of regular cardio. And my martial arts training is also, obviously, it's daily because I teach every day. But usually every day I tend to focus on a different thing. Mm-hmm. So like yeah, Monday, I might focus on punching. Tuesday, I might do footwork or something else. Like Friday is usually like my rumpus day. All right. That's the day where I just do like my crazy training. Mm. So like because I'm in my 40s, right? I cannot train like I'm in my 20s, right? So I cannot be doing like crazy stuff every single day. I'm going to be exhausted. Plus, I have to teach and I have to be able to play with my kids. But Friday is the day where I get like crazy with the Cheese Whiz, right? Mm. So like Friday is the day where I do like heavy bag circuits. And Friday would be the day where I do battle ropes and jumps, you know, like sexy training, like the cool stuff yeah. you see on like a training montage, like all the different things you would do in the gym and like running and all this kind of stuff and punching and going up and down and hitting the wall bag and doing circuits and all this kind of stuff. Most of the regular training I do is pretty structured. Strength training, pretty plain Jane, straightforward. Cardio, plain Jane, straightforward. Martial arts, plain Jane, straightforward. But Friday is kind of like the day where I get like, where I go a little wild, right? Because it allows me to every week see what my progress is. Because if you did that kind of crazy training every day, you would just be burning yourself out, especially at my age. But once a week, it's still possible to like really push it, and you have plenty of time to recover before you do it again. But there might be other weeks where I feel like I was too sedentary. Maybe I need to do some stuff that works on fast twitch muscle fibers, or maybe I need to do stuff like that will improve my reaction. Because one of the things about getting older is obviously reaction time slows down a little bit. Things like that you took for granted when you were younger that goes away, but if you use it, you can still maintain it. I mean, you're obviously going to have age-related decline no matter what you do. But, you know, every once in a while, grab a ball, throw it at a wall, and catch it really quick. Just even doing stuff like that, that's important to remind your brain that, like, hey, we still need to do stuff.
Yeah.
If you're not doing stuff like that on a regular basis, it's easier for your body to kind of start slowing down what you need, right? So I don't do it the same way every time. Friday, I definitely do more explosive stuff. But on one week, I might do more explosive stuff on one week and less on the next week, right? You have to kind of train according to what you feel you need for what your goals are. And those goals should be changing. You don't have the same goal every time. What your goal this month might be different from your goal next month. So you have some variety, you have some novelty built into your training, and feel free to do a little bit of everything.
Okay, dude.
By the way, I just want to say,
yeah,
my wooden dummy book, which I've been talking about for like the longest time,
yeah,
all right, at the time of this podcast, the wooden dummy book is actually in already because we were having a pre-sale and selling out the first run. We have like a few left from the first run, but not many. And so if people want the new wooden dummy book, which is freaking awesome, you go to citywt.com/shop. You can get either the regular copy or you can get a signed copy. We don't have a special promo code right now beyond it's the first edition. The second edition, you know, is never worth as much as the first one. So you want to get the first edition, you should get that one right now. They flew off the shelves. I had no idea how many people. Well, it's right. The wooden dummy book. I should have anticipated it because anytime you do anything with a wooden dummy, you know, you could teach like the best bait. You could teach someone how to punch so hard that they would knock someone down 400 times their size. And they'd be like, cool, can you show me the wooden dummy? All right.
That's why I joined the school.
I could show you how to really punch someone and use your whole body. I could teach you to be one punch man. Uh-huh. That's awesome. I just want to learn the wooden dummy. All right? And so now I have a wooden dummy book where it's quite different from the other wooden dummy books, especially from the WT line. I show the form in brutal detail.
Yeah.
We got the full glossary. It's got the applications. It's got the Chinese mottos, the sayings, development of the wooden dummy, how these things have changed over time, how this thing, different variations between the different lineages and stuff. It is, it's not like many WT books. It's not a pamphlet with some wooden dummy pictures in it. This is like a really in-depth description of the wooden dummy from a WT perspective, and I'm very proud of it. I think it's probably my best book yet, mainly because every book I get a little bit better because I become a slightly better writer every time, hopefully. Yeah. So it is definitely, I think, the best book, mainly because it's the newest one. They just get better. So I'm very proud of it. So if you guys want that out there, citywt.com/shop. We got the wooden dummy book there. It's called The Wooden Dummy Wing Chun Companion Book 5.
Wow.
Yep. All right. Wow. So what's the next question?
Okay, next up we got, forgive me if I botch this.
Mm-hmm.
I should say that every time.
Yeah, because you pretty much do botch it every time.
But I'm going to botch this. But all right. Hoa Hunya.
What? Were those even sounds that came out of your mouth? You know what was crazy? Like, just knowing this dude here, I thought he was going to say, excuse me if I botch this. Dryson. That's what I was waiting for.
I wish I was that savvy.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have a question from that jerk.
Oh, yeah. No, but who knows? I haven't even scrolled down the list.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Fully yet.
Mm-hmm.
But and I do space it out.
Yeah, no, I get
it. Remember Dryson on here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure.
Off the top, I don't remember.
Because, off the top. Off the top is the best way to describe Dryson. All right, let's go.
Hohunya. Hi, KFG.
Yo, what's up?
Love the podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had to use galgapsao, emergency hands?
I don't know what that is in Chinese.
Galgado?
Galgado.
Galgapsao.
Yeah, I don't know what that Chinese is.
One, what?
All right. And what's emergency hands? I've never once seen a fight that wasn't an emergency. You know, when people say, like, the bugi is for emergency situations. Yeah, I get it. It's like when you lose the center line, when you're in a compromised position. But they're like, the bugi is for emergency use only.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, dude, if someone is taking a swing at your face,
it's emergency.
It's an emergency, yeah, all right? I've never once been, like, seen someone defend themselves like, this is not an emergency. Yeah. I can use standard. Oh, no, now I need to use it. No. Like,
well, it happened in the Matrix.
Movements in fighting are not done with, like in a video game where you select a gun. Go like, okay, I'm going to switch to this one now, right?
Yeah.
All self-defense is an emergency, all right? I don't know what the Gal Gadot hands are, though, all right? I know some Chinese. I know some Chinese characters.
Gal Gadot hands.
I know some Cantonese, but I do not know the Gal Gadot hands. Right. So anyway, next question. Sorry, I'm not trying to be a troll. I literally don't know what that is.
Sorry.
I'd never heard of emergency hands as the name of a Wing Chun move.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I've never heard of the Gal Gadot hands.
All right. Well, moving
is
right
that like
along.
Wonder Woman has the two wristbands and she goes like this?
I know it has something to do with Gal Gadot.
All right, okay.
Gal. Hey,
that's
Gal.
What's up. All right.
Shout out to Gal Gadot.
Maybe she wants to be on the podcast. That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. All right. She's talking about, you know, her moves, you know, in that movie.
Which one?
All right, let's go. Let's go.
Let's get it. All right, next up. Got some pop-ups happening over here. Next up, we got Paul. Claire out.
All right.
Claire who? All right.
You know what we need Andrew to do? We need to do an episode of just you pronouncing names.
Botching. The botchings.
That's what's up.
Butcher episode. All right. Ray Park supposedly lives in my neighborhood.
Wow. Nice.
Wait.
It's a park in his neighborhood. What?
No, because Ray Park is from North Finchley, which is where I used to
North
live.
North Finchley.
He live there no more because he's, you know, he's...
Ray Park, for people who don't know, is the guy who played Darth Maul in Phantom Menace.
And he was also the Toad briefly in X-Men.
Ah.
And then lots of other lower tier movies.
Right, yeah. It was all downhill after Darth Maul.
Damn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway. That's the question.
All right.
Can you get Doug Palmer on your show?
Doug Palmer.
Yeah.
Ooh, I would love to get Doug Palmer on.
Not Arnold Palmer.
No, not Arnold Palmer. I would love to get Doug Palmer. So he wrote that book about Bruce Lee, which was really interesting because he had actually traveled to Hong Kong with Bruce Lee in the very early days. And
right.
It's a very, very good book. I think I'm connected with him on Facebook, but I haven't like actually chatted with him, so it's a little weird. Yeah, I would love to have him on. I mean, like people who are close to Bruce Lee and want to talk to me on the podcast, those are always great because those episodes do really well. I don't know, sometimes like because I think that book was published in conjunction with the Lee Estate. So I think sometimes maybe, you know, I also did the Bruce Lee drug letters video. So I always wonder like if... you know, people see that stuff and then, you know, people who are like officially attached to the Lee Estate might not want to talk to me because I, you know, talked about the one thing that they refused to talk about. But no, I mean, if I had Doug Palmer on, obviously I have a lot to talk to him about, especially about that trip that he did in the early 60s going to Hong Kong with Bruce Lee.
That would be
really
cool
fascinating
that,
stuff. Lots of stuff
that,
to talk to about there. Yeah.
On.
No, I would love to. See, I mean, we're about to start our second year, so I would like to do more interviews. And like we said before, if our past videos are any indication, the only interviews people want me to do are anything related to Bruce Lee. Please stop interviewing Hong Kong action movie stars.
Oh, no.
And just interview someone who, you know, cut Bruce Lee's hair twice in the 60s. Like, you know, that seems to be what the KFG fans want. So anyway.
Woo! Man, yeah, all right, shout out to my man Doug. All right, let's move right along to Food for Thought.
Food for Thought, awesome, okay. Yeah. He's great. He's on Instagram, Food for Thought, posts all sorts of really cool stuff about kung fu movies. He's like a kung fu movie guy. He also has a podcast as well. It's like Food for Thought, right? Yeah. But food, right? Really cool stuff. Yeah, I hope to maybe do something with him at some point or whatever. But he's been very supportive of this podcast. He's always comments, always likes, and also on Instagram too. So give him a shout out on Instagram if you guys haven't yet. Food for Thought.
Lit.
Yo.
Hey, Sifu Alex. Since you're a massive fan of both Kung Fu cinema and Star Wars, how do you feel about George Lucas wanting Sammo Hung to choreograph the lightsaber fights in his prequels?
Yeah, so that is...
do you think 20th Century Fox vetoing this was a missed opportunity?
So, it's difficult for me to comment on this because until you asked me this question, I didn't know about that. So I didn't know about George Lucas wanting to have Sammo Hung do the prequels. And I'm sure, because again,
you didn't know it? I knew.
You knew that? Nah, yeah. you're full of it. I look at you totally faking, right? Yeah, nonsense.
I knew it as well.
Yes, of course. So everyone knows. Well, I mean, look, my specialty is really Chinese martial arts. Obviously, I like Chinese kung fu movies, but, you know, there's certain... I'm not like the guy who knows everything about all the movie stuff or whatever. So it's quite possible that definitely escaped, coming in front of me or reading about it, right? I don't know. I don't know about that. So, I mean, first of all, if it was true and they... decided to veto it, then they're a bunch of idiots because Sammo Hung is the best. Okay, there are lots of fight choreographers. All right, obviously Yuen Mo Peng is really good. You have in Hong Kong action cinema and everyone from that background. You have guys that are really, really top of the food chain. All right, but for me, especially after the passing of Lao Ka Leng, I think the mantle of like the king of choreography is Sammo Hung. So if anyone passed up Sammo Hung to do choreography for their movie, they're an idiot. Can you imagine that? I mean, like in the prequels, obviously you had more martial arts based action in the prequels. Obviously, we just talked about Ray Park a moment ago. It did Wushu and stuff like that. I do find that. I mean, now I don't want to turn this into a rant about Star Wars because I could really get into how shitty the prequels are and how just what an abomination the sequel trilogy is. One of my issues with the prequels, besides the fact that they're just god-awful, was the choreography. Because when you look at, like, the original Star Wars trilogy and you watch, like, the lightsaber duel between Vader and Obi-Wan, right? Mm-hmm. And then you look at, like, the Empire Strikes Back and you look at the lightsaber duel between Vader and Luke Skywalker, and then you look at, like, in Jedi and you look at the final one, these are very dramatic fight scenes because the story supported the drama in the action. It wasn't because the action itself was super spectacular, right? Mm-hmm. And that's also, in my opinion, what made the original trilogy. They were just so well written. It was the classic hero's journey, just told in space. And it wasn't because there were backflips and flipping double lightsabers and, you know, all this like cool looking stuff that made those fights good. The reason why the Obi-Wan versus Vader fight was good, even though if you look at the choreography, it's very basic, was because of the tension between the two characters.
Yeah.
That's what made it. And I think part of the problem with martial arts action choreography is that sometimes they forget that a fight is telling part of the story. A fight scene in a movie shouldn't just be there for the sake of it being a fight scene. That fight scene is like dialogue in a movie. It's continuing the story somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so a good fight action set piece has to be part of the story. It has to make sense. Why are these people fighting? Why are they fighting this way? Why is this guy's style like this? Because he's angry. And why does the other guy fight this way? Because he's calm. Like, these things have to be examples of the person's character. These things have to be continuations of the story. These things cannot just be things that are bolted onto a movie, right? And so, and what happens in the prequels where you have like that Ray Park scene where he's like, you know, obviously it's quite spectacular. He's doing Wushu and you have both Obi-Wan and what's the other dude played by Liam Neeson?
Qui-Gon
Jinn. And they're fighting. And that fight scene from a choreography perspective is way better than what you saw in the original Star Wars. But because the tension of the story didn't really build it up in the same way, you're just kind of looking at it like candy. It doesn't have the same stakes. But also the thing that bothered me is, oh, so now the Jedis back in the day were like flipping around and it was all way cool martial arts stuff. But then in the Star Wars trilogy, which is supposed to happen afterwards, they moved like old men. So I felt that they didn't do a good job keeping it consistent. I'd be curious if Sammo Hung would have been able to make the action spectacular, but still keep it consistent to how they fought later. I don't know. In any case, even if he just made it cool looking, it would have been better if Sammo Hung did it.
Man.
100%. You can go to Vegas and put money on that.
Put the money down.
Yeah.
Money down. Thank you, Food for Thought. All right. All right, moving right along, we got Dryzen.
I thought we were going to get away with it.
I know. I thought we were going to have a Dryzen-less episode.
Yeah, that would mix it up for a change, wouldn't it?
Mm. All right, let's go.
Just literally scrolled to this.
Scrolled.
Mm-hmm, scrolled.
Yeah, scrolled.
Scrolled. Wait, is it...
Is right.
I don't know if that's a typo. It might be a typo.
Typo. How do you have a typo on something that's not typed? All right, let's go.
All right, so Dryzen said, what's up, y'all?
Yo.
Yo.
Love the episode with Vincent Lin.
Awesome.
He is mad dope.
You know what's crazy, though? That episode hasn't come out yet at the time of this recording.
He said he did.
So unless Dryzen is a Patreon supporter who saw it over this past weekend.
I guess he is.
Dude, we have 24 Patreon supporters. Yo. I know every single Patreon supporter.
That's crazy.
There's not a single
now
one.
We narrowed it down.
There's not a single Patreon supporter named Dryzen. There's not a single one. Look, we only have 24 Patreon supporters. I know every single one of them by name.
This is good, man. This is good. We almost figured out.
Yeah, we almost. All right, almost.
So he said, yo, dope episode. I have a hypothetical.
Shocker.
Shocker.
You get back from your trip and you have to go pick up your new ride. And you're like, yo, I can't wait. I've been waiting for this ride for seemingly forever.
4 months.
Yeah. Finally, you get to in front of your ride. You're like, wow. Oh, yes. Can I get the keys? Let's get this going. You get in your ride. You start it up. You crank it up a little.
You've heard my new car. That's why.
Ain't even go anywhere yet. Right? He's like, yeah. And then you drive it out. And you're like, yes. It's lit. Smooth.
So you've actually seen me drive my car at this point, my new car.
Smooth right there. You're pumping the sounds. Yeah. And then you're like, you know what? I want to test the speed up on it. But you can't do it just yet. You got to get out of this little New York-ness.
Right. Can't speed in Manhattan. Yeah.
No. Get to the highway. You're like, all right, this almost feels like the Autobahn. Let me just start. And you start to jet it a little. And all of a sudden, you get to like 65, 70. And you hear like a little shift. And then you have like an out-of-body experience. And you all of a sudden...
My new car has turned into a time machine or a portal?
Just out of body.
Got it.
Yeah.
And now you're on the set of some Star Wars on the set. And George is like, yo, dude.
This is so stream of consciousness. What the hell?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, he's like, what the hell was that, bro? That's George not what we discussed.
George Lucas said, what the hell was that, bro?
What the hell is that?
Have you ever actually heard George Lucas speak?
That is not what we discussed. You need to... That choreography scene was a little off.
Okay.
Can we redo that?
Mm.
And you're just looking around like, what the fuck just happened? I don't even know what just happened.
Language.
Yeah.
What? And then you have to, you're
I'm the choreographer for Star Wars.
Yes. But
okay. But for which Star Wars?
Exactly.
Did Dryzen write?
You have to figure it out on the spot, like which one. You're looking around.
I have to figure out on the set of the movie which movie I'm choreographing?
You don't know. You're just like, what? Uh-huh. And you see your man Duke. What's his name? Dookie?
Count Dooku?
Count Dookie.
Oh, so it's one of the prequels. It's the second one.
Count Dookie?
Christopher Lee.
Christopher
Count
Lee.
Count Dookie and Count Yoda.
Okay. Oh, Jesus. Okay, I got it. I got it. I got it. Okay. Now Dryzen has a good question this time.
Now you got
it. I got to choreograph that fight scene. Yeah. Okay. Wow, this is going to turn into the Star Wars episode.
Is it?
The KFG Star Wars episode.
I think it's just a prequel to the KFG Star Wars
Okay. All right, so let me tell you. This is actually a good Dryson hypothetical.
Is it?
Because that fight between Yoda and Dooku.
Duke.
I absolutely hate it.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I hate it so much. I feel that it breaks the whole idea of who Yoda is. I think it breaks the whole idea of how a master Jedi should fight.
Okay.
Because if you watch it, right, look, so when you see Yoda in the original Star Wars, he's just this old ass master, right? Bopping out wisdoms with his weird word order, right?
So ill with
it. With the verbs at the end of the sentences all the and all sorts drops. Of stuff, right? Right? And you know, your father he is, right? Okay.
Walking with the cane.
Yeah. Right? All that kind of stuff, right? Yeah, walking with a cane, like Willy Wonka, right? And then so now we're watching the prequels, which is set obviously years before those movies there. So we're looking at a slightly younger Yoda, although he was still pretty damn old at that point. And but this
like
is still
800.
This is still an active ass-kicking Yoda, as opposed to like living on Dagobah, eating like weird stuff, hanging out with weird animals, Yoda, right? So now we finally have a chance to see Yoda, the great warrior, right? And Yoda is the epitome of wisdom. Mm-hmm. He is the epitome of, you know, mindset of being ease. Like, of ease and being calm and being in control of everything, right? And they made him fight like he was a raccoon on speed. Okay?
Like straight out of Galaxy.
Yeah, no, he's jumping around like a freaking Mexican jumping bean, all right? And flipping around and doing all this stuff. And it's very physical and fast, and that is not how the old wizened master should fight.
Mm-hmm.
The younger Jedis, who are still kind of coming to terms with their power and they're not quite wise yet, but they have the force power. They're the ones that are going to be doing the backflips and moving around and, you know, fighting in a fancy way or whatever, because they're not really fully in control yet. Mm-mm. But as the Jedi Master ages, they should become more calm. They should become and that is not how old-ass Master Yoda should fight. Jumping around and flipping like he's a raccoon on, like, methamphetamines and stuff. Like that is not it.
And that's what George was tight about. George looked at you like, what did you just do with Yoda? Like
I would have done it differently.
No, but he says, yo, Sammo.
Yeah.
Fix that.
Oh, I look like Sammo to him, right? Okay, so it's me.
Oh, so this is Quantum Leap.
Yeah, this is Quantum Leap or whatever, right? Okay. No, I mean, for me, that fight scene's got to be totally different, all right? Dooku is a very powerful dark Jedi or gray Jedi or whatever the hell he was, dark side wielder, whatever. And Yoda is, like, has to be fast and physical to beat this guy. That is not how a wizened Jedi should fight. He should have just been, like, one-handed, couple moves, all right? Or use his force and throw something at Dooku and send him and pin him there and the fight's over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As much as we like to see cool choreography and stuff like that,
just one and
Dooku
done.
Should not have even made Yoda sweat a tiny bit. Mm. And they made him very macho with his like lightsaber going into his hand and stuff like that. That, in my opinion, was a huge misstep. Huge misstep. You need to make him like a samurai. That the moment he turns that lightsaber on, he's chopping a head off. And when that lightsaber turns off, the guy's dead.
One and done.
Shoom, shoom, done. That's Yoda.
And have the whole audience like.
Yeah, whoa. That's Yoda. Not jumping around like a methamphetamine-laced Mexican jumping bean raccoon. All right? That was extremely disappointing. Oh, that was garbage. Yes.
Right? So basically, yes to all of that. First of all, Dooku was apparently Yoda's Padawan.
Yes.
So immediately, like, there's that element.
There's that.
Right? By the end of Revenge of the Sith, Padme's just had the baby. So the actual time between them and Luke is only about 25 years.
Right.
So you're saying he could move that fast 25 years earlier to being like, I can't do this?
Exactly. Exactly. You That was serious age-related decline for Yoda, all right? Those that Yoda species, they're good for 800 years, but like after that, it's just downhill.
And if you really want to get really deep with it, I've watched Star Wars Rebels, and the fight between, I'm going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't, the fight between Maul and Obi-Wan,
yes,
when they meet in the last season,
yes,
is exactly like it. It's just a two...
Yes,
that's it.
That I thought they did a really good job with that.
And that's how that fight should
It should have been. Yeah. So there you go. That's my answer to that. All right, we got one more question. Time for one more question.
Darth Maul?
Yeah.
Oh, you spoiled it for him.
I did.
Gets bodied?
Mm-hmm.
What? Ray Park?
That was the cartoon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't even think Ray Park did the voice.
All right,
they won't even hire him back for that.
All right. So we got room for one more?
Yeah.
All right, next up, we got Felipe Godoy.
All right.
I was going to say Gordon, butcher it, but right. It's Godoy.
Or Gal Gadot hands.
Greetings. I am curious about the Wing Chun weapons training. When practicing the knives and longbow forms and techniques, one should be visualizing a combat against what weapon? Butterfly swords, single broadsword,
Sword.
Long pole, staff, spear, or all of the above. In Wing Chun, are there any drills where students partner up using the knives against a long pole? If another WT instructor challenges you for a weapon-friendly match.
What's a friendly weapons match? I've never heard that before. We're going to have a friendly gun duel.
If that were to happen, which one would you choose, knives or pole? Thanks.
Okay, great question. So your mileage may vary depending on the lineage you come from. They're obviously talked about on a recent episode. There are multiple variations of the Bacham Do with different emphasis and so on and so forth. The Bacham Do, as it's taught in the Leungting lineage, is essentially the 8 sets of the Bacham Do. Each set teaches you to fight either against a different type of weapon or a different angle of attack, or a different kind of mode of using that weapon. So I wouldn't say when you're doing the form, you need to visualize certain weapons. When you're doing the form, you need to try to execute the techniques as best as you can according to the form. When you need to visualize stuff, well, that's when you actually start sparring with the weapon, right? So I think sometimes maybe if people have not had a chance to see the applications of the knives, then they rely way too much on the form to figure stuff out. And that might be why he's confused as to what weapon do you visualize. Well, if you are in the WT lineage, for example, it's very clear. For example, the first set of the Bacham Do in the WT lineage focuses on the Gap Do, which is the clamping knives, which is against a spear thrust or a short mid-level thrust towards your chest. That's a very specific thing. The fifth set, for example, deals with fighting broadsword or overhead attacks. The seventh set of the Bacham Do in the WT lineage teaches you to fight against a flexible weapon like a chain or something like that. The eighth set, which is the final set of the form, so to a certain degree, if the Bacham Do is the most advanced thing you learn in Wing Chun, then the eighth and final set is technically the most advanced thing in Wing Chun, if you want to kind of frame it that way. Mm. The final set of the WT Bacham Do teaches you how to fight the long pole. Because when you have two short knives and you have to now fight someone who's got a 9-foot long pole, you're at a bit of a disadvantage, especially if you have not learned how to bridge the gap with footwork. So to a certain degree, at least in WT, one of the biggest quote-unquote secrets, although I don't really like using that terminology because that you get into kung fu movie territory when you talk that way, is how do you manage the distance with two short knives against an extremely long weapon like the long pole? And that is essentially the entire domain of the 8th set of the Bacham Do. Mm-hmm. And all the other sets specialize in fighting against different types of weapons or different modes of using that weapon. So that is all part of the curriculum when you learn from a qualified instructor, that they teach you the form and they teach you how to use it, and different movements in the form and different sets of the form may be designed or optimized to fight against different types of weapons. It's not It's not just like you're, which maybe, and I'm not saying that that's the case with the person who's asking this question, but maybe in some versions of the Bacham Do out there that people teach, they're just kind of doing some moves with the Bacham Do in a few different sets, and then they're kind of left out there to figure out how to do it. And then so for them, they don't know, oh, this is actually designed for this type of thing. So they're just there kind of with knives in their hands going like, well, if you have a broadsword, I guess I'll do this, or you have that. No, if you need to understand from Chinese martial arts perspective, the liabilities for fighting different types of weapons, how you would use a certain weapon against another type of weapon. And this is knowledge that should be passed down from your instructor. This should not be up to the student to go like, well, I think this movement might be for a long pole, all right? Mm-hmm. You can, once you've mastered it, use these movements against different things and then come up with your own ideas and interpretation. But that is provided you know the basic, you know the basic knives to begin with. Like, you know what this stuff is for. I think that you need to make sure that you're learning it from someone who can tell you those things. It's not something you necessarily come up with at random. And so if I had to fight with any one of the weapons, I don't know. I would still choose a gun. Oh, wait, that wasn't the choice. It was either the knives or the pole. Well, I suppose it would depend on what the other person had. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the knives are way more consequent in terms of like finality.
Okay.
But I am better with the long pole than I am with the knives.
So if someone has COVID, you get long pole.
COVID, you got long pole. Yeah, right. Exactly. Gotcha. Right. Yeah, definitely. So there you go. that's a very, very interesting question. And there are no friendly matches in martial arts. And I would say that they're less friendly matches when it comes to weapons fighting. And so before we get out of here, I just want to say something. I want to make an announcement.
Oh,
so, you know, for the longest time, I have Instagram, right? I have at the Kung Fu Genius on Instagram. And we also have at City Wing Chun for the school. Well, for the longest time, my social media was actually managed by a social media manager because KFG did not have time for that stuff, right? But now that the podcast is growing and a lot of people want to have the ability to interface with me, maybe they want to do lessons online or they want to find out something or they want to, you know, get some more information for whatever reason, I've actually decided to take over my public Instagram account. So,
interesting.
So now on Instagram, at the Kung Fu Genius, when you see all these new postings, I took it over around Christmas of 2021. That's all me now. So that is literally me actually doing my own Instagram
How
now.
How is that going so
It's
far?
Good. I'm learning a lot. Yeah. I don't know anything about social media, but I'm learning very, very quickly.
I myself.
Yeah. So if you know, people out there, you want to kind of keep up to date with all things at the, you know, all things Kung Fu Genius, at the Kung Fu Genius on Instagram, obviously also at City Wing Chun, that's WingTsun, for stuff related to the school. But definitely appreciate you guys following me out there because I'm actually in charge of that right now. I always felt bad because people would comment on the public one and you know, my social media manager would sometimes answer or she'd forward it to me, but now if people comment on there, I can actually answer and interface. I'm also in charge of the public Facebook page, which is also facebook.com/thekungfugenius, which also we have a lot of the posts and stuff that are on the Instagram account. So I'm running all that stuff now. Yo. As much as I would prefer to still outsource it to someone else, it's at the point now because of the podcast, the momentum that we have here, where you know, people maybe want to have some outlet to get a hold of me. Mm-hmm. And I cannot always guarantee an instant response, or I cannot always guarantee a good response because I do get very, very busy. But I will at least like your comment if your comment isn't rude. So I'd appreciate a follow at the Kung Fu Genius on Instagram and on Facebook, facebook.com/the. It's not Kung Fu Genius, the Kung Fu Genius. Mm. Also, if you guys are on Twitter, at the Kung Fu Genius
on
Twitter.
You've been handling that Twitter.
I've been handling Twitter for a while,
so that's
too.
That's like the practice.
Yeah. And if you guys want to get featured on the KFGIG, Instagram, then all you need to do is if you've bought a book from me on the online shop, like my Sunum Tao book, Chum Q book, Chi Zhao book, or the new Wooden Dummy book, and you like it,
Featured. Yeah,
all you have to do is take a photo of you with the book, take a photo of how much you like the book, or even do a video like talking about, hey, this book is awesome, like maybe 30 seconds or less on a video, post it on your Instagram account, tag at the Kung Fu Genius, and use the hashtag, you got to use the hashtag, KFG Swag. KFGSWAAG, all right? KFG swag. So you tag at the Kung Fu Genius, hashtag KFG swag, you know, talk about, and if it's not a book, if you bought an online course from us, or a shirt,
swag,
or like some of the training equipment, sparring equipment, you know, make a post with the equipment, talk about how much you like it, or, you know, talk about how much you like the book or whatever it is. Put it on your Instagram. I'll feature it either in the stories or I'll put it on the actual feed if it kind of fits, like, visually. And you'll get a shout out on there as well. And of course, obviously, I appreciate it because you guys are actually helping me get the word out there. It's one thing if I tell you my books are good. It's another thing if the people who are reading them say that those books are good, even if I have to bribe them to be on the on there as well. And we have every time you do a post with KFG swag, you get automatically entered in. About maybe every couple months or so, we're going to pick a random person because all the hashtag KFG swag comes up in one thing. I follow that hashtag. So maybe every month, 2-3 months, whenever, I will collect all those. I'll see all the people who posted and we reposted it there. And all of those people are entered to win. All right. Like, and so we're going to have kind of a drawing. And there are three potential prizes. It's usually one prize per quarter. One of them is 50% off any ITC. All right. And that is like kind of a big deal, right? If you want to come and do some training, you can get off that. There are also two other prizes there as well. But for the life of me, I cannot remember them right now. but they are. I remember one of them is you can get a free lesson, 30 minute lesson through Zoom with me. Just by winning the drawing as a token of appreciation for you guys helping me get the word out there, especially for my books. Yeah, one of them is a 30-minute Zoom session with me where you have questions about Wing Chun or you want me to show you something or whatever, we can do that too. Basically, we do a lesson on there as well. The second prize, for the life of me, I cannot remember.
Well, that's the third one you can't remember. You just dropped the first.
I remember the... The lesson with me is the third one. It's the one in the middle I can't remember. But it is on the Instagram channel. So if you go to the Instagram channel, I have a couple posts there where you can see what the contest is and stuff like that. So definitely appreciate it. So that is me bribing my audience out there because, you know, I also want to hear from you guys, how you guys are liking the books and stuff. And I'm very happy with the Wooden Dummy book, which is now available at citywt.com/shop. The link is also below in the description. So definitely appreciate it. And that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, well, I got to say, just enter the swaggin'.
Wow!
Enter the swaggin'.
Wow!
Oh, my bad.
And that's all I got to say about that. Well, hope you guys liked that episode of The Kung Fu Genius. As always, don't forget to subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius, like the videos, share them on your social media platforms, and comment below any questions you want me to answer on a future episode. And as always, I'll see you guys next time.
Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor.
Alright, put that shit away. Oh my god, that sound is so annoying in the headphones. Seriously.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ting.
Let's clap it in. Clap. All right. Fantastic.
Wow, that's a soul clap.
Like a soul patch. You know a soul patch? It's just this part right here. Yeah. A lot of dudes in Seattle had that, like grunge dudes.
Yeah.
A soul patch. We used to just call them an asshole patch. All right. So here we are. Ready?
Don't we got clapping in?
We just literally just clapped it in. Are you okay? And then you said that was a soul clap, and that started the whole other conversation. Dre, are you all right? Jesus, he okay? First he forgets the tripod on the day we got to record the podcast.
Andrew, just make sure you edit that out.
Yes, no.
I think
that in the bloopers.
Have you seen that current picture of Jeff Bezos with the two models where he looks like Pitbull?
No.
That's what he looks like. Yeah. It's like I'll find a picture for it.
Yeah,
like,
budget Pitbull. Yeah. All right, here we go.
Budget Bezos.
Budget Jeff Bezos.
Wow. And I thought I wasn't going to bust out loud because he hit the curtain when he did it. And I was like, oh, he's going to crack. And I saw it. No, he stuck it. Yeah. He stuck the landing.
I heard this.
And
I
you did it.
With women's boobs.
And yeah, and you did it in one take.
That's not.
That, sir.
Not like me.
Is, you know, it's very unlike you.
A raccoon on speed.
All right, cool. There we go. Don't forget to comment below with any questions you want me to answer on a future MMA. MMA. Fuck!
All right, why do dads...
Yo. All right. Don't even start. Don't forget to like the Kung... Fuck you!
Don't forget to like the Kung... Genius.
Wow. All right, you fuckers. Turn your head. I want to look at your face. Turn your head. I want to look at your face. I'm going to laugh. You did it in one take, and now I'm turning into freaking Dre from the early podcast days where I cannot even get something simple that I do every episode in one take.
Best blooper
reel. You better make me look good, Andrew. All right, here we go. Okay, everyone. Well, I hope you liked that episode of the Fuck You.
The Fuck You.
Okay, everyone, well, I hope you like that. Fuck you. Fuck you. Seriously, fuck you. All right, everyone, well, I hope you like that episode of The Kung Fu Genius, as always.
This is what a month in Florida does to you.
Yeah, this is what a month of Florida does to you, right? Yeah. Dude, don't even start. I see your face. I see your face.
I was looking at the question, the Dreisen question.
I was looking at the Dreisen question.
Oh, yeah. Really?
All right, here we go. All right, both of you guys get out of the studio. Out. I had to throw away these napkins. Yo, Dre, these napkins are throwing me off. Throw them away. Why is there a kosher Chinese restaurant menu in here? Throw that out. All that stuff is messing with my flow. All right, close that door. Next time. I did it right, you sons of bitch. All right, everyone, well, I hope you hated that fucking episode of The Kung Fu Genius. Don't forget to like and subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius and fuck off, seriously. Okay.